Get Pucked.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Get Pucked podcast. Vito and Matt here today. Unfortunately, no Dave. And on that topic, just fast, for those that have been questioning where we've been the last 2 weeks, unfortunately, one guy got sick, another guy got sick, family obligations. These things happen at the worst time because it was right near the end of the season and we had a bunch of stuff to talk about. Anyways, we're not going to go bang that drum. Let's move on. Let's press on. How you doing, Vito?
I'm all right. A little disappointed that we couldn't get some stuff out in the last 2 weeks, but all right. Well,
we're here now. So let's talk about some halves, shall we? Season is over. We're entering the postseason now. Unfortunately, the Canadians, of course, are not going to be playing in the postseason, but that isn't to say that there's not a bunch of things to talk about. We're going to be having episodes, obviously, leading up closer to the draft about the draft, so we're not going to get into that. Let's talk about the season that was. So first things first, hot off the press, Martin St. Louis, the option was picked up. He's going to be around. They added the extra 2 years, so I think it's three more seasons as the bench boss of the Canadians. Initial reaction?
Great. I had written on Twitter, X rather, that the team is growing, and he is growing as a coach as well. So I think the timeline for both the coach and the team itself is just perfect. I'm very excited that he's coming back. There was some speculation that and some rumors being thrown out there, people questioning whether he wanted to come back or not. For me, there was never a doubt in my mind that he was going to come back. Either. Unless there was some kind of family issue or something of that nature that would have kept him away from signing with the Canadians. But he's the right mix. You see, he's gotten really attached to the players. He's coaching them the way they should. You saw the growth in Slafkovský this season, especially when there was, that rumor that he might be, headed down to the Laval Rocket. And instead, apparently Martin St. Louis got involved and said, we want to keep him in Montreal.
Suzuki as well.
Suzuki as well, I think you had mentioned it last episode or the one before that, is that while certain players may have looked like they've taken a step back and with their strengths, they've rounded out the rest of their game. And I feel that some Marty St. Louis has something to do with that, where he's trying to make complete players or make players a little more well-rounded and diverse versus just being one-dimensional type players. So for me, it's a good one. Dude. Marty St. Louis was just, he's a perfect fit for the Montreal Canadiens and where they're at. The question mark will be after the three seasons, where Montreal is going to be at and whether he's still the right guy at that point.
Yeah, I mean, let's not even look 3 years down the road. Who knows what's going to happen even after next year? I just like to think back on the initial hiring of Martin St. Louis. And how everybody at the time was like, this is a peewee coach, this guy's never coached, this, that, and whatever. For the most part, I'm sure there's some people that are still out there that are not, on the Martin St. Louis bandwagon. But I think the proof is in the pudding. I think if you look at the team, I think if you look at the players, I think if you look at the overall, I know it's a cliche term, but the culture that exists now on the team, there's a stark difference between now at the end of this year, where I watched the game last night, the last game of the season. And although they lost, the guys were on the ice. They had smiles. I know this kind of bothered some people, but whatever. They were smiling. They were giving each other hugs. Like this is not a defeated team. Now, of course, they weren't playing for playoff aspirations and the season was long over, but there's just something about what he brings. I think it's a testament to his character specifically. And moreover, This is a guy who I think the Canadians might have taken a diamond out of the rough. We know that he was a phenomenal hockey player, but like we've seen with Wayne Gretzky in the past, that doesn't always necessarily translate to coaching. And I think that Martin St. Louis was geared for this. He has the temperament for this. He has the passion for this. And you can actually see, like you were saying, the improvements. The overall improvements to the game of the players. So yeah, I echo your sentiment completely.
Well, you can tell he's also that guy. He's kind of that guy that he's not one of those people that wants to be up in the rafters being a general manager. You can tell he likes to be right into it. Right.
Yeah, well, he said as much. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he likes to work with the players. And when a person loves what they're doing, it's not really a job. You know what I mean? That cliche statement, that quote there. But so you can see he loves being a coach. He loves getting to know each and every player and working with their strengths, working their weaknesses, rounding out their game. You can see he's the right guy. There was definitely a reason why Kent Hughes and Jeff Gordon brought on Marty St. Louis. And they just seem to have the right chemistry and the right blend together as an administration.
It's a clean wash, right? It's a non-recycled guy. You have a brand new GM, never GM before. He's here now. You have a brand new coach, never coached before. He's here. Jeff Gordon came in and orchestrated this and saw that this whole recycled notion that exists in the NHL, that wasn't going to fly anymore. This team, if you were going to do the rebuild, the dreaded rebuild word that this fan base allegedly would never allow an administration to do, the fans in Montreal will not allow it, was always the sentiment. I think he went through it pretty masterfully. He got new everything, a new athletic trainer. He got new medical, like it's new everything. This is a new day, new dawn. And to do this, to do it properly, we got to go from the ground up and we're going to take our time. And it's the same message even now in his end of season press conference. He was talking about, yes, we have aspirations for playoffs next year, obviously. We're all competitive and the fan base deserves it, no doubt about it. But at the end of the day, when they go and do whatever they're going to do in the offseason, everything will be done with the mindset that we will not jeopardize development, because they see the core, they like the core, and they want that to be what's going to be successful for 10 plus years. So you're not going to start trading off top level caliber prospects, like the top core prospects that we have. We'll get into the other prospects in a moment, but you're not going to jeopardize them and trade them off to go get a veteran who's only going to be here like 2-3 years and you think, oh, we're going to go for a big run. That's not what they're going to do. And I think that's a massive, massive factor overall to the trajectory of where this team is going.
Let me just go back to when you mentioned culture. Okay, so he definitely has helped to instill a culture. Now, this also carries over from the Shea Weber, Carey Price era where that concept of culture, the talking about culture, instilling a better culture was already being spoken about. Marty St. Louis comes in and continues that Hall of Fame culture and all that. And what I want to touch on is that Lane Hutson played his first two NHL games. And in a quick interview, he mentioned that he was basically greeted and He was greeted, and right away, the Nick Suzuki, Cole Caulfield, Slafkovský took him in like he's already part of the team. And he felt that right away, and instead it helped young kids like Lane Hutson not feel out of place, that they could step right in and feel like they're a part of that team. And that was something, if you go back a few years, how many times did you hear rumors swirling that, a player got traded to the Montreal Canadiens and, they were at the airport and it was a taxi that just picked them up, and there was nowhere for them to go. That's the type of stuff that we were hearing back then. And whether we're not so close to know if that was true or not, but where there's smoke, there's fire, and we were hearing that often about a lot of players and a lot of kids and whatnot that were just left to fend for themselves. And when you leave young 18-, 19-, and 20-year-olds in Montreal to fend for themselves, they could tend to get in a little bit of trouble, so there's definitely a culture here. And everybody's talking about it. Montreal, Jeff Gordon said it in the postseason presser, Montreal is going to be a place where players of all talent levels are going to either want to play in Montreal or at least strongly consider playing for Montreal. And Marty St. Louis definitely has a piece to play in that.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's any doubt in my mind that he brings a very high caliber sort of ethic as well. And a lot of people see that and they like how he's doing it. It sounds like both veterans and the young guys alike enjoy his style of coaching.
What happened to Vinny LeCavalier?
He's there. He's there. He's up there somewhere. He's I don't know what his exact special assistant or whatever. He's out in Florida doing his thing.
I get he's got a title and whatnot, but I mean,
We haven't seen him
since the golf tournament.
Well, because I think his whole thing is he stays in Florida. He's like scouting in Florida and he's like there on decision making. Like they ask him, like, Vinny, what do you think? And he's out in Florida.
It's a weird situation. And I find that nobody's really asked it. Where's Vinny?
Well, because really the two-headed monster of the team is Gordon and Hughes. Like they make the calls. I just think that they brought Vinny in you know, as somebody they trust and think that has a really good hockey eye as well. And he's out in Florida and he's doing his thing. I mean, you know what? Put his face on a milk carton. If anybody knows where Vinny is, you let us know. Vito wants to know.
I don't know where Vinny is.
That's it. Well, like I mentioned, I mean, and most people, obviously, by the time they listen to this, know the season's over. Give me one word to summarize the season.
It's I'm going to use the word progress. It's ironic because if you look at them in the standings right now, especially we don't know if they're going to draft right now for the lottery draft five or six, yeah. Right? So if they end up at fifth, it's the same place as they were last year. However, a lot of players have progressed. A lot of players have produced that didn't last year. Montreal leads the league in overtime losses. Just half of those put them, you know, half of them could have gone either way and would have put them in a playoff position, so to speak, or at least fighting for a playoff spot. Yeah. They're the team that lost, I think, the most one-goal games in the entire NHL this year.
Yeah,
I think so when you're looking at it that way, last year there was entertaining hockey, but there was many more games that were just dreadful to watch. It was like a big mix of everything. This season, there was a lot more entertaining hockey being played. You saw the growth of a lot of our star players or our future star players, or at least the players that the teams have invested quite a bit into. And you're seeing there's a lot to be excited for next year. So I'm going to say progress for this year.
Progress for this year. That's pretty good. That's not bad.
What about you?
I think I want to say takeoff. That's what I want to say. Takeoff in a sense. Explain. That
that's not really one word, but go on.
Well, takeoff. Okay, I put a hyphen there. Really, I'm saying it in such a way like I feel that this was a pivotal year for a lot of the young core that took that next step. They're taking off now. They're going on to the next level of what they're capable of doing. I think the organization is taking off now to the next level of what the rebuild is. I don't necessarily know if that means playoffs. I don't. But I definitely think, put it down now, April, whatever we are, 17th. Make sure you note that I'm saying next season, when the Canadians finish that season, they will have more points than 76 points.
What I also like when you think of it is that last year when we were looking at it, we had some question marks. Oh, what's going to happen with the goalies? Is Nick Suzuki the number one center? Who are going to...
That's what I'm
saying. It's starting to clear up. The water is not as murky as it was before.
Yeah, exactly.
You know that Sam Montembeau is our number one goalie. The question mark is going to be, is Primo going to stay there? Fowler's eventually going to come to Laval. Like, are they going to go and Fowler's get it?
A couple years.
You know? Just to say, like, the goaltending position is not as murky. Defense, there's question marks, but it's not so much as to who are they gonna like trade as a veteran, who's gonna be the number one defenseman. It's okay, they have a lot of young defensemen, they can't keep them all. Who are they gonna use to leverage to go get something to address another need? Nick Suzuki is the number one center on the Montreal Canadiens roster. Barring any like, oh my god, big splash that dethrones him from that spot, he's the number one guy. You seem to have your number one line cemented now. Before, we didn't have a number one line.
Wow. It's like, who's playing on the right? It's funny. On the left? Yeah, you know? But hold on. It's funny you say that because, unfortunately, he's not here. But I think he won't mind if I mention it on his behalf. If you were to ask somebody like Dave, for example, do you have a number one line? He'd give you one of his Dave faces and say, do you? Like some people are not 100% convinced that first line that was out there for the majority of this season with Slefkovsky and Suzuki and Caulfield are a number one line. And Dave, if you're listening, you feel free, you can comment yourself if you like, if you have changed your thoughts about this or if I misspeak on your behalf. But I'm in agreement with you. I think for the most part, you've answered a lot of questions. There are obviously many more questions to answer, but a bunch of the things that were standing out at the beginning of the season, you now have a much more concise view of it. That three-goalie rotation is gone and hopefully will never happen again. You're rocking Monty. You're rocking Primo. They were both very serviceable.
He can play in the NHL.
Primo is an NHL backup.
Is he a goaltender that could be a 1A, 1B type of scenario. That's to, remains to be seen.
He's still growing.
He does have the best goals. He did have the best goals against average on the Montreal Canadiens roster, the best save percentage on the Montreal Canadiens roster.
He also played the least.
But he played the least, right? So next year, with having a bit more of a bigger workload, will he be able to maintain that and sustain what he was doing by the end of the season?
I mean,
will tell. But that's the type of question marks were asking before. It was like, okay, who's going to get put on waivers? Who's going to get traded?
Well, that's always, right? You know, so, like I said, that's the changed. Water's not as murky anymore. That's it. So you got those guys there, and again, right? They're serviceable. Can either of them, Primo being much younger, can they find next season and take it to another level and really start to show as a legitimate option as a starter? You hope so. But at the very least, you're going to have two guys that are going to play a lot more games, and they're going to be a lot more consistent in their schedule, which I think is going to help them overall. That's good. Suzuki, huge season. I know you got other teams that are looking, saying your top guy only had 77 points. Okay, fair. But bear in mind, this is a big leap from where he was last year. Bear in mind, if you will, that the Montreal Canadiens of this season had one line. One line. With all the other injuries and all the other things that have happened, they had to do the brunt of the work night in, night out. You had other teams who wanted to shut down the Canadiens. They needed to shut down that one line. Suzuki had to play a lot of defensive roles as well. He
was everywhere. Points playing against the best.
That's what I'm getting at. So my point is, imagine next year, if you will, for a second, just hypothetically, just spitballing here. You keep the same first line. Now suddenly you have a second line, which Newhook was a revelation once he came back. He was playing some really good hockey. And people are making the comparison to what Doc was doing towards the tail end of last season too, with the hopefulness of the upcoming season to come. You have Doc, you have Newhook, and for the sake of argument, let's put Josh Hua on that line too. Let's say all three of those guys go to where we're hoping they're going to be. Not even max potential, but like they take that next step. Enough that they need to keep the other teams honest about them. You can't ignore them. Suddenly, what do you think is going to happen to that first line? They're going to draw more opportunities against the weaker defensive pairings and against the weaker lines. Not all the time, but more often. That is ultimately going to lead to more goals. So is it feasible for Suzuki to all of a sudden be an 85-point player next year?
Well, absolutely. He's always had point-per-game potential. But you see, like, is he at the levels of the McDavids of the world? Absolutely not. But at the same time, there are number one centers across the league that are posting up similar numbers or have posted similar numbers, give or take 5-10 points here and there. Not 10 points, but 5 points. Rupie Hintz is a perfect example. Rupie Hintz has been a perennial. He's been a 70-point center, 37 goals until this year. Okay, this year he's at 65 points in 79 games, 30 goals. He's considered a number one center. Nico Hischier, considered a number one center. You could argue it should be Jack Hughes and, you know, the coaching or whatever.
It should be,
right? But, I mean, you have guys that are number one centers that are 75-plus point players. The thing is that he scored 33 goals. That is huge. For a team that was lacking goal scoring, they got 33 goals while playing the toughest matchups. There has been definitely an uptick in Suzuki's game. He's brought his game to another level. I do think that Suzuki can be a point-per-game player. I think he'll plateau at around that 85-ish points. That's my theory. That's my opinion. I don't see him as being a guy who's going to break 100 or even, like, you know, could he have a crazy season when the whole team's gelling together and be in the low 90s? Possibly. But for now, let's be happy with the 77 points. Let's be happy that Caulfield, while he didn't score the goals that people were projecting to score at the beginning of the season, he has he had a career year in terms of his stats. Mm-hmm. He also, you know what I mean, his points per game. Sovkovsky hit 50 points and 20 goals in his second year in the NHL. Newhook also hit new highs there too, while missing a good chunk of the season. There's a lot to
take off. They're taking off, baby.
They're taking off. And I do expect that next year they will take their season and their game to another level. Next year, add Kirby Doc. Hopefully he doesn't get hurt and he's healthy to play. But and then add whatever talent that they may add in the offseason and the changes that they do. I'm excited to see the Montreal Canadiens next year. I'm excited to see the Montreal Canadiens for the next few years because the future is bright and it's very bright.
I think a lot of people echo your sentiment. Let's talk about the future for half a second, because you look at the team, right? We're now done with the season. There's no more games to be played for this particular team. So now the obvious thing to do is to start to consider, well, what are they going to do in the offseason? And you hear in the press conference that Gorton said, and I'm paraphrasing, but they're going to look to do some big moves. They're going to look to do something to help this team take the next step. And most people who have been tracking the team know that you're probably missing anywhere between 2 and 3 pieces for this team to really be ready to rock. Of course, if the goaltending ends up solidifying itself even better, there's one question down. Defense, I think you're pretty okay on defense. We'll get to it in a moment. But you got 3 guys, 2 of which are UFAs, and they're not coming back, in Colin White and Tanner Pearson. So they're gone. You have RFA in Jesse Ylönen, who I think is not going to be offered a contract, to be honest with you. I don't think he has a spot.
They may qualify him just so that they don't lose him for nothing. But at the same time,
send him down on waivers, and then maybe he gets claimed. Because, I mean,
well, he would have to accept his qualifying offer. But at the same time, it wouldn't surprise me if he goes and takes another, you know, opportunity elsewhere. But what's he going to get that's so different than what he would have gotten here in Montreal, right? Because he's kind of stuck in that position where he didn't produce enough to be enticing, and he didn't use a shot, which is one of his strengths, often enough to be like, okay, this guy could turn him into a sniper of sorts. So it's like, he'd be better off, in my opinion, having the conversation with Kent Hughes and seeing where he fits next season and trying to get himself a guaranteed, even if it's fourth line, but play to his strengths. He's not a fourth line player, at least not his body is the way his game is not fourth line material. But at the same time, maybe it's also time for him, for the Montreal Canadiens, and for him to move on to open up a roster spot for somebody who's better suited for the role.
This is my point I'm trying to make, that when I pull up the roster and I plug in the guys who are under contract next year, just looking at the top 12 that have contracts, you have a full lineup.
Yeah.
Now, we've always been talking about the defensemen. We have a plethora of defensive prospects. And a lot of guys that have shown what they can do and where they're kind of getting to. And you got guys like Kovacevic, you got Justin Barron's of the world, you got Jordan Harris's, you got Jane Struble's, and the list goes on. And they bring up Mayu and they have Lane Hudson, who are likely going to vie for spots next season as well. So you got a ton of defensive prospects. And we can even talk about the elephant in the room about Mike Matheson. Some people think this is the moment. You got to strike while this is hot. He's, you know, 60-something points. I'm more of the camp that you keep him, personally. But that aside for a second, we'll get to defense. I look at again at the top 12. You have a full lineup. But we're all in agreement they have to upgrade. They need to go get somebody and upgrade up there. You need more goals. You need probably at least, if you're going to get one guy, you need a 30-goal scorer. That's what you
got to
go get.
Kent Hughes mentioned it in the presser that they need to add more talent. He said it. Okay, so that's another thing I wanted to bring up.
But what are you going to do with the team then? Because your first line, you're not touching. Doc and Newhook are going to be on your second line, possibly depending on who you get. But
I see
on.
a Doc type of trade. I see a Doc type of trade with some of the defense.
I don't see a Doc trade anymore. I don't think you can go on aspirations and promise of a player. I think if they're going to make a move, it's got to be for a guy who's already made his bones and you know what you're getting.
I think it will be both. They're going to make a Doc level trade because at some point across the NHL, there are teams that are coveting and require young, promising defensemen. Doesn't matter the type of defenseman, but they need somebody. I've said it before in previous episodes. I think that Jordan Harris and Justin Barron's days with the Montreal Canadiens are numbered. I don't think they're going to give those guys away, but they're going to, you know, they're going to be included in something to get something else to address a different need for Montreal Canadiens, because they've got too many defensemen and they've got guys that are already knocking on the door in Logan Mailloux. Lane Hudson, while it's been a small sample size, he wasn't out of place. You know, what are you going to do with Jack Eye and Struble and all that? Like, they've got too much. I don't think that's for sure. I think Matheson stays with Montreal. I think that David Savard might start with Montreal, but by trade deadline, he's a goner.
Yeah, but he's starting with the team. There's no doubt in my mind he's starting with the team.
You're going to see in the offseason, you're going to see a doc level trade. And again, to go back to Kent Hughes, did mention that adding talent is going to be a priority for sure. And it's just what do they see as adding talent? Is it somebody in the UFA market that's a little bit more of an older player? Not saying somebody in their late 30s, but somebody, you know, in their late 20s, perhaps. Is it, you know, another new hook doc type of gamble where they know that this kid is a young 21, 22, 23-year-old player would fit well, and that's the talent that they're talking about? We don't know what the mindset is there. Because now this coming offseason is going to be the transition to the next phase of that rebuild.
Which is why I think that it's going to be hard. Like you're alluding to Kent Johnson, I think. He's probably the guy that people are talking about the most as another Dawkian type.
I think that's too easy to connect that dot. Because when it comes to Kent Hughes, so far we've never been able to predict what player it was. Yeah, sure, Kent Johnson. It's people connecting those dots. You know, like I said a few episodes back that maybe somebody like Marchessault would be good as a UFA. And I got crapped on and whatnot. And now
got crapped on. But
people are bringing it up. People are bringing it up on X right now. You know, they've been bringing it up for the last few days. Marchessault might be a good pick. TSN 690 even brought it up.
Marchessault would be a good pick, but you're going to have to overpay him. And he is 31.
He's 33. Yeah.
Okay. Well, so I mean, the timetable there is a little bit weird. I'm just saying, even if you do that. Okay, bring it back and explain it to me. You have a full roster. It's full now. It's already full, and you haven't gone and done it. Your biggest currency are your defensemen. Unless if you make whoever you're training take some of your guys from up front, which is not going to be simple to do because everybody's got contracts. I mean, like you got, for example, is Joshua Hua going to make the team?
Yeah, he will.
So if he makes the team.
He was doing great till he got hurt.
He was. I'm not necessarily saying no, that's a crazy thing that you just said. But if he makes the team, he's taking that spot that's left over. Pretending that they don't offer Yolonen a contract. I got cap friendly open here, so I'm just shoving him down here. So now you got a full 12 with Michael Pezzetta as your 13th. Okay. Your third line right now on paper is Armia, Dvorak, and Gallagher. And your fourth line is Harvey Pinard, Evans, and Josh Anderson at $5.5 million.
Well, you did. Okay, hold on a second. Hold on, time out. You're looking at it right now with the injuries that are in place.
No, I'm not. I put everybody back.
Where do you have Joshua? Why then?
I put him on the second line with Doc and Newhook.
I would say he's going more in the third line.
Whatever. The point is, the body is there. Now, I'm in agreement. I look at this roster and I say, well, this is the roster they had this year. The only difference is Kirby Dach is plugged in and he's not hurt. Does Kirby Dach make the difference and boost this team up however many goals that he can possibly do, and suddenly they bridge the gap of 15 points and make the playoffs?
Hold on a second.
I don't know.
Kirby Dach.
I don't think so.
Let's say he stays healthy. You're still talking about a guy that I think, anyway, is at least 60 points. He's a 55.
Was this team one 60-point player away from making up 15 points in the standings for a playoff spot?
Well, Matt, when you think of how many games that they lost, one-goal games they lost, he could have been a difference maker on those games.
Yeah, but they also don't even guarantee a win.
They don't guarantee a win. I understand, but they don't guarantee, you know what I mean? It's like
They
were missing a key player, and it was a number two seed. Now, the only thing that helped is that Monahan was there to be a stopgap until the season ended. But then they traded him, and then the number two seed was? Exactly.
Well, plug and play was a rotation.
Exactly.
Yeah. Newhook for a while, Jake Evans for a while, you know.
No,
but for example, something I wanted to mention. I know we're kind of like we're examining the team and we're jumping all over the place. Joel Armia, everybody and their mother wanted this guy gone. Everybody. He was the whipping boy galore, and deservingly so. This guy couldn't put 2 points together.
I think it's gonna be a little easier to move him now.
Well, now since he's come back up, Are you comfortable if he does another whole season next year on the team?
But he won't. He's got one more year left after this deal. After this, he's got next season. That's it.
Next season, is that it? Yeah. So my point is, do you try to move him? Is he movable now, prior to how he was looked at before, and he won't even start on the team at the beginning of next season?
He is movable now, but I still think that in order to move him, Montreal might have to retain some salary on him, and I don't think they're going to do that just yet because they only got one retention spot left for the entire year. And they typically they want to keep a retention spot for the trade deadline. Yeah, right? Yeah. So, but I think also at the same time, they won't be reluctant to use that retention spot if it means that when they're going to plan out the moves that they're going to make, if, you know, they're going to come up with using up all three and they don't have anything for a trade deadline, if it makes an impact. If the move that they need to make that move to get that player that talented player that they're looking for. So I do think that Armia, while his season, his end of season, second half, if you want to call it that, or even call it
the last
quarter of his season,
yeah,
really was a very good one. And it showed other teams across the league that he's not lost. He can still play. He just, you know, there was a confidence thing more than anything else. That he, you know, take a gamble on him, especially when at the end of the year he's a UFA. I think also during the offseason, teams will have more flexibility to be able to absorb more contracts to make a deal work. Cap is going up significantly.
Well, I'll tell you this much. Again, coming back to the same sentiment I've been saying now for the last 10 minutes, I'm not that excited. Well, I'm excited, but I'm less so about the defensive prospects, which I'm positive they're not all going to be here on this organization at the start of next season.
Kent Hughes hinted it out a little bit on the presser that, you know, they have to, because somebody had asked them, did he have certain conversations with some of the defensemen, because there's so many of them, and to tell them that they may or may not be here at the start of next season. What Kent Hughes responded, and I'm paraphrasing, of course, is their agents had already started calling him months ago, asking those types of questions. And he did not tell them yes, and he did not tell them no. They need to see how certain things unfold with the lottery draft. They need to prioritize other things. But he's been the type of GM that he doesn't blindside anybody and he lets them all know from everything we've read. So
that's fine, but that already
is being said that some of the defensemen are going to go. I still think it's the two that I mentioned right off the top. Off the top, you're looking at Harris and Barrett are gone. So that's going to open up the spots for the other defensemen that are there.
It's the easy thing to talk about. I'm much, much more interested on how he's going to maneuver the top 12 because he has to get rid of some of those guys.
So the way I'm looking at it is you got to figure out what you're going to do with Christian Dvorak. Now, the thing is about Christian Dvorak, his $4.45 million is, while it's still rich when you look at it for what he's doing from a production standpoint, he could be a very serviceable third line center.
If he would just stop getting hurt,
yeah.
He would not be such an albatross of a contract. But yeah, you got to figure out what you're doing with him. You got to figure out what you're doing with Armia. You got to figure out what you're doing. Like RHP, does he even make the team out of camp next season?
He does. The question mark before he got hurt this season, we were like, okay, he's a guy that's going to start on the third line, let's say, push down the galley or whatever, and can jump up when he gets, you know, when there's an injury like he did the last year. But
he had a bad season.
I have no sources on this. I think they're going to try to do something with Josh Anderson.
Well, sure. Except that for sure you're going to have to retain.
Oh, 100%. I think that's the type of impact move that Montreal might be willing to retain on.
If you sell the idea of Josh Anderson being what Marc Bergevin was hoping he would be when he acquired him, and you somehow convince the GM that you're making the deal with, that you have the opportunity to bring out of him what we couldn't. He's got a big contract. Bring me your big guy. Take a bunch of my defensive prospects also to help you out. Take a first round pick too, but give me the stud I want. Now suddenly you get that stud on the team. Joshua Fong moves down to the third line.
Hold on, and it makes a little bit more sense. You could see Josh Anderson also potentially being moved where in a situation where it's not salary retained, but it's problem for problem in a package. where there's a player in a specific team that is an issue for that team. And Josh Anderson's not an issue character-wise or within the dressing room. He's an issue because he's getting paid $5.5 million and had one of the worst seasons of his career. And
you need to move people out to make spots.
I understand, but you can take a problem for a problem that has less term and not have to retain salary. And then it gives you flexibility, trade deadline. There's always about flexibility in the cap.
I honestly can't see a GM doing that and just doing.
We don't know what's swap. Going to happen I'm because sure, our, yeah, relocation yeah, is yeah, coming,
okay,
baby.
Dave. Okay, relocation, Dave, I know.
Relocation is coming. And we don't know what type of splashes that general manager, that administration is going to want to make. The whole dynamic this offseason is going to be different because of relocation.
I mean, it's you make an excellent point. That guy who's buying the team there, I forgot his name already, but he it's already out there that like once they're relocated, if it gets approved at the time of this recording, technically speaking, it hasn't been approved yet by the Board of Governors or whatever. But if that happens,
who's going to say no to $1 billion? I think the NHL is going to say no to $1 billion.
Do I think they're moving to Utah? Billion. Yes. Am I happy that this insanity in the desert is finally ending? Yes. Everybody who listens to this podcast knows my sentiments about the Arizona Coyotes. Now, do I think they're going to succeed in Salt Lake City? I don't know. What I do know is in Arizona, let alone that they were playing in a ridiculous place, and that's aside from the staff, like they don't have anything to do about that, the staff and the GM. The owner there also wasn't a big proponent of spending money. It was always about hitting the floor. Hit the floor. Now this guy comes out and says, I want to do a big splash. I'm going to go after everybody. Yeah, you're right. It's going to change the complexion of the offseason, which is why I'm so excited. Because in my estimation, if they're going to do what they're saying that they want to do, Kent Hughes and Jeff Gordon, and that they're going to go and try to get a big piece or two to help get you those extra points that you need that would have otherwise won you all those games that you only lost by one goal, then you have to make room in your top 12. And you got guys with contracts across the board here. You have a full roster. So I'm super curious to know how they're going to finagle trades to get some of these guys out to make room to bring people in.
He's going to be creative, that's for sure. They're going to have to be creative. They're going to have to figure out what to do. They might have to, they got a lot of picks coming up. They won't be able to keep all those picks and players that they're going to draft. So they're going to have to leverage some of the draft picks that they have. They've got the assets to make certain moves. They need to be able to sell and make it enticing enough for the other GM on the other side to say, yeah, okay, I'll do that. And you know what? Kent Hughes hasn't failed us once to do these types of things.
And I have a lot of faith in him. I think the thing that I'm sitting back and this, I pose the question to the listeners that have made it along here at the, whatever the 30 something ish mark. Would you be okay if in order to get that big guy to come back, the 30 plus goal scorer, the 80 plus potential guy that's out there that this team is needing, would you be okay with finding a way to unload your contracts up front, but you got to give, and you're going to have to give a lot. And I know that you're mentioning Struble and Harris, and these could be guys that could be swapped for a Dockian type player, sure. But if you want a guy who's already made his bones, a guy that you know that you're going to get, are you going to be comfortable giving up your grade A prospects in addition to probably first round picks? Is that something that, fan base, you're comfortable? And I mean to say the ghoulies of the world. Or possibly even, I know this is blasphemy to mention, but possibly even the Lane Hudsons of the world. The Reinbachers of the world. Because that's our strength, is defense. If that's what it takes, my friend, would you be comfortable with it? I know you don't like it. But if you're sitting there and you're like, you're going to give me a guy who can get me 35 goals and 80 plus points.
It depends who we're talking. If you're telling me it's like a 29-year-old veteran that he sure is an 80-point player, then no.
25-year-old.
Okay, 25-year-old, again, depends who. But I wouldn't do it for Zegras if that's what you're hinting to.
No, that's probably a bit rich for Zegras. Yeah.
What some people
I'm saying it's a guy that's past the show me point. I'm talking about, I'll have to come up with an actual name and perhaps I'll add it to the comment section of the video when we're done here. But I'm just saying, when they isolate that player that everybody in the fan base and them themselves have said that they are missing, a top level talent, a goal scorer. Now, you got to give to get, man. It's got to be. And you got a ton of defensive prospects. And we're all sitting here laughing at ourselves saying, yeah, okay, we want to keep Hudson. We want to keep Reinbacher. We want to keep Gouley. We want to keep Mayu. We want to keep all the good ones. And then the ones that are one tier under that, yeah, we're willing to swap them. We'll change them. It's not a big deal. It ain't going to work that way. I'm telling you now, it's not going to work that way. One of those four, I think, will have to be on the move to be packaged together with a top pick. I don't know if it's the Habs pick, to be fair. It could be Calgary's of next year, or it could be Winnipeg's of this year. It's going to be packaged with a player up front or two to get some salary off the books and spots available. And you're going to need to do that kind of a deal to get something back. And I at this point, it's curious because I feel like a lot of the fan base is down the middle about this. They don't want to part with those guys, but at the same time, they understand the need of having the upfront support.
Okay, you're going to see certain fans start to change their opinions and mindsets about it once the draft happens. If the Montreal Canadiens manage to land one of the top talented forwards in the draft, because that's where I think one of those forwards that are believed to be able to come into the NHL immediately. Now, they won't make an impact right away. They won't make an impact right away, but that's the type of player that, you know, you're going to look and say, okay, that could change the plans of the Montreal Canadiens. But yeah, so something like that. That's where I think you'll see where certain fans are going to start changing their opinions and their tunes on things.
I'm just pulling up just quickly here. I just want to find the top goal scorers. I mean, I don't want to get too nuts, and it's got to be somebody who's not that old, and it's got to be, I mean, the Marshall, but he's UFA, so maybe they just get him outright. But to actually trade to possibly go and trade, well, there's Sebastian Aho again. Be hilarious. Pettersson, but I don't think he's going anywhere. I mean, and then already I'm at rank 26 where I find Suzuki, who had 33 points. Clayton Keller could be interesting. He had 33 points. He's kind of the right age. It's that whole notion of going to Utah. Maybe he really doesn't want to go there. Who the hell knows what's going to happen with that? But it's interesting. It's at least interesting to talk about. I mean, at this point, I'm starting to dip low here, and I don't see anybody else that's jumping out that I'm like, okay, this is a monster. Listen, it's going to be tough. I'm curious to know who the fans that are listening, who they would try to target. If you were to put together a super package that pretty much ensures that minus maybe the top 10 players of the NHL, this package is going to get you that guy. Who's that guy that you think that comes in here and really makes the Hab take the next step? Let us know in the comments below. I'm curious. I'll come up with a name also, and we'll share it in the next episode. I got one for you.
Martin Nikas.
It's an interesting pick because do I think he helps? Of course. Does he come with the pedigree that I would expect the player to come with if you're giving up the package I suggested? No. I expect more. Now, maybe I'm crazy, but if I'm giving you a grade A defensive stud prospect, I'm giving you a first round pick. I'm probably giving you another good prospect, and I'm giving you one or two bona fide NHL players. I'm not saying
I would give up. I give up all those crazy pieces and all that stuff, but Martin Nikas would be a great addition to the Montreal Canadiens if they're able to land him and pay him a reasonable pay for a guy who can produce, who's been up and down the Carolina roster, not because it doesn't have the talent, because they're just that deep.
Well, I'm curious to know what other people are thinking too about this, because I mean, they're gonna do something. I think free agency is always an option, and there are guys like we keep mentioning, Marchessault, out there that could potentially be interesting. But I think the true bread and butter move of the offseason is going to be a big package deal to go bring a big player back. And I just don't really know who they're targeting. And again, they're going to have to do some sort of gymnastics with the current roster they have up front, because you have a full deck and it's not good enough. We saw that this year, and I don't believe a healthy Kirby Dach would have made that significant of a difference this year to bring them over the hump. So you need more firepower. You need more goals. You need better upfront action. Now, who is that, and where they're going to do it? That's what I'm most interested in. The defensive stuff, they're going to move defensemen. I don't know what they're going to do with it. I don't know how they're going to play with it. They have just a comical amount of defensive prospects. They're going to move. So I'm curious where that's going to lead us. We're going to keep, obviously, our ear to the social media sphere to see what's happening as the rumors keep progressing, as we start moving towards free agency, which is where we're already looking at. I know the postseason is just starting, but
we'll look at the draft.
Draft is going to be huge, of course. If they end up moving up from their spot, if they stay at five and they have the opportunity to get first overall pick, that's going to be massive. But I think if they drop anywhere in the top five, they're going to get a really, really good player.
That's where I think they're everybody's way. Anybody who's out of the playoffs and is in the lottery draft, they're all waiting to see what that lottery draft is going to look like, because hypothetically speaking, Montreal gets lucky and wins the lottery draft, all of a sudden things change big time, especially down the middle with having someone like Mac Celebrini there.
Oh, 100%.
You know what I mean? So we'll see. On a non-Habs related note, we're going to be seeing more Marc-Andre Fleury hockey.
Yep. Back for one more year. So that'll be good to see. I'm happy for Flower. I think we're going to wrap it up here, though. We covered a whole bunch of different stuff, maybe a little bit more disorganized than our usual means of doing this. But let us know, guys, what your aspirations are for the offseason now that we're here, what you would do if you were in charge and who you would target. I think that's pretty much the big talking points that a lot of us are going to be doing for the next couple of weeks and months even. And I think perhaps next episode we're going to maybe veer just a tiny bit away from the Habs and take a look at the playoff picture, and give our sort of thoughts and opinions about who's
going to win. We're still going to talk Habs.
We're still going to talk Habs, but I think, you know, just a little bit to keep us in line with what's going on with the playoffs and see where certain teams are going to go there. We're gonna keep a vested interest in that, and soon thereafter we're going to start really getting into the draft, and we'll provide some analysis from some of the trusted sources that we have out there that we believe in, that are providing really good stuff about the upcoming draft. We'll share our thoughts about that as well, and our hopes on who they're going to take. So stay tuned for that one. Thanks very much for listening, and for Vito and Dave in absentee, this was Get Pucked.